Hello and welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, May 5th, 2025. I'm Carl James, joined by Zach Horwitz, Chris Feeney, and Cassidy Palmer. Indiana responded well to the Iowa sweep, going 4-0 on this past week, all on the road. This includes a midweek win over Evansville and a sweep of Abilene Christian in Texas. Jake Hanley went 7-for-15 on the week, including three home runs, earning his second Big Ten Freshman of the Week honors. But he wasn't alone. A lot of guys excelled this past week. Chris, who earned the red belts?
Thanks, Carl. Well, after this week, we've only got two more weeks left of red belt awards to get to the season total. We might talk about them in the Big Ten tournament. And after we win that, we might talk about how we do in the regional. But obviously, it's a regular season award. So for this past week, with only 2 weeks to go, Jake Hanley. He got his freshman for the Big Ten, and he gets a red belt for us. 4-for-5, one game with 5 RBIs, 2 bombs, a triple, and a single. All he needed was the double for the cycle. He got that the next game. He went 1-for-4 with a double, 2 RBIs. Then he went 2-for-4 with 2 RBIs and another home run. So Jake's been solid. You get 7 hits and 9 RBIs, you know, it would take an even more special weekend to get the red belt out of your trophy case. But Jake definitely earned that one. As far as the other ones, defensive red belt for the Tony Butler Award, I'm going TJ Skyler because he throws out 2 base runners, right? He keeps his head during that crazy ninth went smooth. You got the bases loaded. It didn't matter, okay? That eighth inning was huge. You know, his body language didn't change after that bunt weird hit, and neither did Yarberry's, honestly. Because after that, I'm always looking like, how's the guys look? How are they looking? And they look like, okay, we'll just move on to the next. And it was shocking, actually. Because you're like, what could go wrong? And then he walks the guy. He walks the tying run. Body language, still cool. Let's sit. Let's do this. And that battery, those two worked as a real good team, I felt, in that moment. So TJ gets the defensive belt. That guy, Zant Payne, gets hit by a pitch in the first, gets hit by a pitch in the fifth. And Skyler throws him out both times. So maybe he just wasn't happy with him getting hit by a pitch. I don't know what it was, but TJ didn't like him on the base pass at all. For the pitching award, Jackson Yarbrough, for me, was an easy pick. I know you say, wait a minute, the guy came in the game and walked in a tie and run, but it's what he did after that. You know, what he did after that to keep his head, that weird bunt thing. And again, that was that Zant guy too. How many guys just throw that away? I've watched major leaguers lose their mind when that happens. And it's like, what can I do to keep my calm when everything is crazy around me? And that battery of Yarberry and Skyler really kept their calm, their body language, everything they had to do. I mean, I went back to the scoring page. After the walk, which again, we don't want anybody walking any runs in. I got that. But after that, the man threw 7 pitches. It was bases loaded, nobody out, and Yarberry threw 7 pitches. A 2-2 strikeout swinging, a foul out, and an 0-2K. I mean, come on. So that was big time. And then we get the run, you know, off that Skyler base hit, whatever you want to call that. I call it special placement hitting. But either way, Yarbrough comes back out on the ninth, 7 more pitches. It's a ground at a third, a pop up to center, and an 0-2 strikeout. So the man threw 14 pitches after walking in the tie and run, got 6 outs. To me, that was special. I know the coaching staff loved the way this thing played out. Because these games didn't really mean too much. And we were just destroying people, Evansville. And then these guys, the first couple games. And then we got a pressure cooker at the end. And you get to see what guys are made of. And I really thought it was important for everybody who was on the field for the last few innings of that game to really show you can clear the mechanism, do what you have to do. Now, for this next weekend, I don't want any pressure cookers. I want all blowouts. And Zach's going to preview this weekend. It's graduation weekend, and we got the team from, what is that? The Wabash River coming to visit us. Zach, he's got the preview.
Yep. The Purdue Boilermakers, they enter a weekend series in Bloomington with a 28-19 record, but don't let that fool you. As they do regularly, Purdue has a rather weak non-conference schedule where they stand at 19-4. But in the conference, though, they are below the 12-team tournament cut line at 9-15 in the Big Ten. But they did just pick up a series win over Northwestern this past weekend. So with no midweek matchup and knowing the clear rotation for the Boilers. Indiana should have a good game plan to win this series. Purdue will go with right-handed pitcher Carter Dorn, who threw 20 scoreless innings in a row earlier this season. He's been a bit cold as of late, as more teams have begun to see him. He showcases a 4.47 ERA, and the strikeout numbers aren't anything spectacular. So that's Friday night. Saturday will be a good test against a sophomore righty, Cole Van Assen, who's coming off a 7-inning shutout at Northwestern, against Northwestern. He's only walked three batters in his last 22 innings pitched, so that's another key to look out for. So he'll attack the zone on Saturday. And Sunday's game is familiar territory for Indiana, where they'll see an off-speed heavy left-hander in Easton Story. So the southpaw has jumped into the rotation about halfway through the season, and he's found his groove. His season high is only 5 innings pitched. So Indiana can get to the bullpen in either one of the first two games. They'll have a heavy advantage during that final meeting. The bullpen for the Boilermakers includes the double barrel action of 2 fifth-year students in left-handed pitcher Michael Vallone and right-hander Avery Cook. Both have around a 4 ERA and are used heavily around out of the bullpen. You'll see him probably multiple times this weekend, if I had to guess. And at the plate, it's a two-man show of Logan Sutter and Brandon Anderson. Sutter leads the Big Ten in doubles with 20, and he bats at a 380 mark, so really impressive from him. And Anderson as well is over the 300 mark in batting average. The Indiana backstop, as Chris mentioned before, has been drastically improved defensively, and they'll be tested. Purdue is not afraid to run, having stolen 82 bags this year. They have four different players with double-digit stolen bases, so that is a focus to key in on this upcoming weekend. So the game's Friday night at 6 p.m. Saturday is at 2 p.m. Those two are on Big Ten Plus. And then Mother's Day Sunday is not a normal noon start, but it's a 4 p.m. game that is broadcasted on Big Ten Network. So travel and park accordingly. You'll see it on social media as it is graduation weekend in Bloomington as well. But show your appreciation for the Indiana seniors who are playing their final home series at the BART. So Indiana looks to make it three straight series wins over Purdue dating back to 2022. The Hoosiers have won the final two games of the regular season last year against them and also beat Purdue in the Big Ten tournament. So they look to extend the win streak over the rivals this upcoming weekend in Bloomington.
This week was relatively low stakes, but nonetheless, Indiana swept the week and played mostly good baseball on the road. Cass, what do we take away from this week?
Yeah, so for me, doing the job that needed to get done. That's what happened. And doing it in a variety of ways. I mean, while Friday did get a little closer toward the end, that one was never really in doubt. Particularly with Gilly pretty well being Gilly, good amount of strikeouts, low stress situations. That went well. Saturday was the blowout game. Like that's as fun as it is to watch, it didn't really mean too much there. But to me, the encouraging bit, and you guys can kind of attest to how frustrated I was getting during that Sunday game of finding a way to win despite making all of the different mistakes possible. Whether it be an error or just a misplay, a mistake, some running mishaps, the those were real. Some of those sends from third base were very aggressive, and the team was aggressive on the base paths this weekend, but some of those were shockingly aggressive sends, particularly from third to home.
Listen, the man sent everybody.
Yes,
Okay,
he
he
did.
did.
Everybody's
Coach,
running. Just
send them, coach. I say send everybody. He did nothing wrong. He had the time. There was a dead drop dead time. Let's not forget that.
yes.
This was Sunday's game. You're referencing mostly, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
A
so
few other spots
those
in the
ones.
weekend,
Yeah, well, true. But
but
I'm going to
they
focus on Sunday because he had
right,
that
those
drop dead
were
time in his mind.
right, because Friday and Saturday it didn't really matter.
Right.
Sunday was when it was like, okay, this is potentially costing us here.
Yeah, listen, he's an aggressive guy.
Oh, he very is, evidently.
Well, he wanted to see. He wanted to get some extra run out of his players. I see nothing wrong with it at all. I'm always sending everybody. I don't know. We send them everybody, and everybody gets a 3-0 green light. And I think that would be fun.
Yeah. But so being able to overcome some of those adversities, some of those misplays, some errors that actually were costly, seeing that response within the game, to me, was probably the most encouraging bit from the weekend, even if it did have my heart rate up a little higher than I would have preferred. So to me, that's the big thing. And seeing the team come through when it matters. And Carl had asked about essentially situations where there's a runner on third, one out, and there's a strikeout. What does this team do next? So going from a sacrifice situation to it's got to be a hit or an error. And honestly, this team does pretty damn well in those situations. Whether you look at just that next at bat or you look at any subsequent two out at bats, this team hits .333. And that's where it's coming from, because they're striking out with a runner on third and one out probably more than anyone would like. There are quite a few of those situations, but when it matters, when it's okay, this has got to be a hit or the inning's done, yeah, the team's producing when it matters. Throwing a few walks and HBPs in there, and that's the part of the matter. But on the other side of it, if you keep striking out with a runner on third and fewer than two outs, you are relying on getting that timely hit as opposed to putting it deep enough in the outfield as a sacrifice run scores. Yay. So that is something to watch for. But overall, again, most important thing I took out of the weekend was they survived that last game. They pulled it out, came back, and did just enough to get it done. That means more to me going into late season than the blowout does. How about you guys?
Yeah, I think the story of the whole season is really the pitching staff, and of a sweep against a team that is a non-conference matchup. I think four innings you look at, which is Drew Burr and Jackson Yarberry, they toss scoreless innings. It's unfortunate that we're in May and you divert your attention to the Big Ten tournament. Hopefully Indiana gets in this coming weekend, but you're going to need those kinds of guys when you get there. So four scoreless innings from Burr and Yarberry to get healthy and come back into this rotation. That's really a big thing for this team. And offensively, they had 7 hits, 17 hits and 8 hits in 3 games. TJ Skyler also, Chris, you mentioned it before with the defense behind the plate, but the 3 RBI effort, multi-hit on Sunday. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you're going to need from the bottom half of the order to get deep into these games and into the season. You need some production throughout the lineup. So I think it was just a collective effort on the weekend. I mean, this is a team that they should have beat in a series, and obviously Sunday got a little close and they were trailing most of the game, but you come out on top and now you're 9-10 on the road. They finally won some games away from the BART, and you're going to need that when you go to Omaha, so for the Big Ten tournament. So that's really what I think. It's a low stakes weekend, but I'm glad they came out with all three.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Chris, you were really focusing on the fact of, you know, how important and interesting a game that last one was. And we know this, we just haven't seen this team compete really well in close games. And now in the last few weeks, they've had a couple of them where they've been down late in a game and come back. And at this point, you've now seen them. There isn't a huge sample size, but you've seen them win games in multiple ways now, which I think about halfway through the season, you hadn't seen. Now, there's still one way that's a little frustrating that you haven't seen this team win a game in yet. And And now I don't necessarily want to see that happen on display, but I'm just thinking probably out of four games in Omaha, there's just going to be a game in which the offense is going to have to pick the pitching up. And that's one thing they have not done yet. And I didn't realize until I just went through this little exercise by going through the schedule that they have allowed more than 7 runs, the pitching staff has, 12 times. The offense hasn't picked them up in any of them. They're 0-12 in those games.
But what innings were they in? I'm sure they were all before the fifth. Now, we've talked about this. It changes the mentality of these hitters, man. When it's 8-0 on a Tuesday in the fourth inning, I feel like it changes it. Then if it was 7-5, 8-6, 9-3, and, you know, back and forth, then, yeah, the pitcher gives up a lot of runs, and then we're fighting back. There's been so many times where these guys have come to the plate in the third and the fourth inning down 8-0.
Yeah.
So that, to me, that's just such – that's – they're not going to come back from that. They've proven it.
But they've scored 15, 14, 18 runs in a game.
Killing somebody or that are back and forth. But we go down big, we don't come back. Except for that fight against Maryland, which was awesome.
But do you think they're not capable? Do you think the offense is not capable of doing this?
Oh, no, they're capable, but the mindset they've shown.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that that's the next thing that needs to change is that, okay, true. we're down 5-6 runs. Doesn't matter. We're going to score. We're down 8 runs. We've still got 5 innings left. We can score 10 runs.
Yeah.
We've scored 9 runs in a single inning.
We haven't seen anything like that yet.
Yeah. It's just we've now seen something else added. That's what I would like to see added next. Of course, right. At the same time, you know, I don't want to see them give up 10 runs. But if that were to happen, to some degree, I would be curious to see can the offense dig the pitching out of one game? Because I have this feeling that out of four games in Omaha, I don't know that the pitching is going to be able to hold it for all four.
Yeah.
And the offense is going to have to win one of those games.
Right. And in the first game that they're going to play in the pool play, there's a short leash on any pitcher. They're going to have to win the first game because they're not going to be a top 4 seed. So you're using your best guy in the first game. And in game two, if they're short on pitching, that's going to be the key. The offense has to be the powerhouse, the backbone of the team that day. So, yeah, well, only time will tell. We'll see what happens with that.
Yep.
Maybe they're waiting for the tournament to show that one. I don't know.
And a little bit before the tournament, though, I'm really curious to see what the pitching deployment plan is going to be. Because with what Zach just brought up, I was kind of playing it out in my head. And I think part of it will depend upon how the first two games in this Purdue series go. But I'm curious if they possibly hold Kraft and Gilly back, that those guys do not go on Friday. They hold them back and then see if everybody else can get them over the hump and win a game or two against Purdue. And if they do, then not use them Sunday, but instead, weirdly enough, use them in Cincinnati on Tuesday and line them up again for Tuesday start in the Big Ten tournament, where it's a must-win scenario.
Perfect fit. It's a perfect fit. You're calling it. I didn't even realize how that linked together.
Because the other thing is, not only is it that they're your best combination, because they probably are, but it's not like they're absolutely heads and tails above everybody else. But this is the thing: they are both veteran guys that have shown that they can turn around quickly. So if it is a Tuesday start, then there's 4 days rest. They can come around and do it again on Sunday. So you have the opportunity to do that twice. And then that means, again, along with Zach's comment there, you know, a lot of guys are going to have short leashes. So being able to possibly get 5 to 6 out of each of those guys by splitting them into the two bookends of the week. And again, I'm just throwing that out there. I have no clue what they're really planning, but it is a gamble, because the one thing you do absolutely have to do is you do have to get into the tournament. Now I've looked at the scenarios, and it would require, I mean, it would require essentially losing out plus some other things happening for Indiana to not get in. But it's not like it's impossible that they don't get in either. So
It's only a two-game lead, right?
it's only a two-game lead. Yes, that
Yeah.
makes it feel tighter than it is,
Okay.
because there are five teams in that in between Indiana and losing
Yeah, I'm
that.
looking right at it, but two of them we lose the tiebreaker to, and two of them we didn't play, right? Nebraska and Rutgers. Illinois and Penn State we lose, right?
Depend on head to
Head
head.
to head, head to
It
head. Okay.
won't be head to head because there's going to be if it happens, it'll be a group of them all at one altogether.
So we
So
wouldn't end up head to head for them for 12.
no,
Okay.
the odds of that happening are very slim.
Because that's the fun of Illinois beat us in the series, and we're currently ahead of them in the rankings with the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
So.
Plus, a couple of these teams play each other.
Yeah. Right.
So,
So they can't both go 6-0.
right. So there's a lot of this. There's a lot of things that it's just it would be a really bizarre scenario, and I think even somewhat hamstrung if they decide to hamstring themselves with pitching, I still think Indiana should at the very least win a game against Purdue. If not still win the series, even if they were to completely skipped Kraft and Gilly. But at the same time, you have that option that okay, you lose the first two, all right, you go ahead and throw them on Sunday to ensure you get that one win to get into the tournament. But
I was thinking if they do qualify for the Big Ten tournament and you just throw the RPI, the any dreams out the window, they don't pitch at Michigan. That series almost doesn't matter if you're in the tournament. If you don't care about your seed in the Big Ten tournament, you save your arms. Your only chance for the postseason is in Omaha. So if they get there, either what Carl brought up with the pitching plan going to Tuesday and then you have a week off, or you pitch them on Saturday or Sunday in the Purdue series and you give them all the time off until you get to the Big Ten tournament. So I'm curious to see what they do with this, but hopefully they can win a game maybe Friday without using those guys and then go from there.
There is a precedent to go off of here. And I hate to bring it up because it is a very painful memory. But if anyone will remember the Iowa series from 22, that is the example where they went up 12 nothing
On their ace, on their
on Adam
slug
Mazur, on the
pitcher.
Big Ten pitcher of the
Yes.
year,
Rocking
Adam
them.
Mazur, and then
Kicking them out of
lost.
the game.
And then gave up 30 runs. But that was a direct result of they were going all in on resting the pitchers in order to be set up for that Big Ten tournament. So they and I'll tell you this, they had not locked up getting in yet. And it was, I mean, it was like it came down to a very bizarre tiebreaker that IU got into that tournament on.
When did we get in? We got in the day before the last day, though, didn't we?
No, it was the
Was it the
last
last
day.
day?
It was the last day.
Listen, when we go to Michigan, Carl, I want to already be in this tournament. This
Oh,
is
I
what we need
agree.
to focus on.
To
We don't
some
want to be sitting there at these games needing to win.
I completely agree with you,
Want to relax and have fun.
but the same time as but what I'm saying though is to set up the pitching. That may actually need to start this weekend. It may they may not be able to wait till Michigan to do this.
Because Tuesday comes quick after that Saturday. There's no game that Sunday.
Right. And the other thing is I don't think they want to completely skip somebody. But the thing is, what does that set you up? It means you kind of have to throw your best guys against Cincinnati. But the truth is that might be the best tune-up of all, because that's going to be the best team
Oh,
that
yeah.
Indiana's going to see
They're
between
better
now
than
and tournament.
Purdue and Michigan.
Yeah.
They might make the tournament, right? At large.
Yeah, well they just
They're
swept a
good.
top 25 team.
They're
So
good.
on
Cincinnati's good.
the
They're a good team.
road. Yeah. They had fallen off. They were ranked earlier in the season. They fell off a bit. But they're on their way. Again, that sweep of Kansas was huge. And right now they are definitely on the positive side of the bubble. So that's a tournament team they're going to. It's very much going to be a quad one game because they're in the 40s
Don't
in my
matter
opinion.
for us.
But I'm just saying is it's they haven't played a lot of quad one games, so it's
True. True.
yeah it's a yeah I agree it doesn't matter for the resume itself, but
Resume,
just
our resume is a dog pile or no dog pile.
right. Now there are two reasons why RPI can kind of matter, and they're really low, but they're still there. Number one is the is if we talk about one of these large log jams of like three or four teams all tied for a seed or to get in, RPI is likely to become a tiebreaker in that scenario. That is the way the tiebreakers are written, is if you don't have if you haven't all played each other and you don't have a common opponent or you're tied within your common opponent, it goes to RPI per WarrenNolan.com. That is literally in the tiebreaker rule is per WarrenNolan.com, which I think is fun because that's
I saw that he sent that in the email. I saw. What did you had asked him for that or something?
Well, no, I was verifying because with everything else having changed this year, I was making sure that nothing had actually changed. It turns out that some of the wording had changed, like that whole team not being suspended business that had not been in the tiebreaker document
Really
before.
saying, right? You might not be eligible to play in this tournament if you got a
Yeah.
bad stuff. You're in
Yeah, I don't
trouble.
know what prompted that because that was not in the document the year before, but that's
Somebody
there.
must have gone very close to the line recently.
But other than that, the actual tiebreaker procedures had didn't as it turned out change. But there's that. The other thing though is if Indiana does dogpile, there could be a question as to whether Indiana would get a three or a four seed in the regional. So the RPI then comes into play because it's a question of our Indiana's RPI versus the other auto bids. And is it higher than 16 other auto bids in order to bump up to a three seed compared to a four seed? Less again, both of those things are likely of less import are of minor importance compared to the typical year where you're trying for an at-large bid, but they still can factor in. All right. So, Chris, what updates do we have from the professional ranks?
Thanks, Carl. As always, at Pro Bowl Hoosiers has been keeping us up to date. David Welch as well. There are quite a few. I don't even know if I can go through all these, but we want so many of our guys. David's been putting together these player comparisons, like player A and player B. Who would you rather? Who's having a better year? And not putting the names on the top. And even if you're not, looking it through with candy striped glasses, you're picking our guys. And like, why aren't they getting called up? A couple of examples. Matt Lloyd, he is second in OBP in the league for the double A that he's in, sixth in batting average, OPS, ninth in slugging, seventh in RBIs. Philip Glasser, first in batting average in the whole damn league, second in OBP, second in OPS, ninth in slugging, seventh in hits. I mean, both of these guys are tearing a cover off the ball. We joked last week about Glasser being in that slump because he had like a 360 week. But he was, he's back now though. He went on a 481 week for this week. Matt Lloyd, 429. He also hit a walk. Lloyd hit three bombs and one was a walk-off grand slam. He had nine RBIs. Glasser had a 5-for-5 night and hit. He got. They played seven games. He got a hit in every single one. So these two are just on fire. And we're talking about, again, no offense to people's teams, but we're talking about the Cardinals and the Nationals. Please let these kids come up and play rather than who's ever in that spot right now. Couple
No
of updates.
offense, Cass.
Well,
considering the Cards just took the series against the
And
Mets,
I
so.
have to say, we swept them and then they beat us 2 out of 3, two games in one day. But I still say call Matt Lloyd up there. I'd rather see him playing than whoever the hell was out there this weekend. Carter Matheson, a big Friday night dive and catch, threw two guys out and hit a home run. So Carter had a big Friday night. Let's see. Oh, Caleb Barriger. You got to be with us probably for quite a while to remember that name. He was a big Sunday starter for us back in the day. I want to say, 16, 17 maybe? And he had a quick little run with the Giants as a reliever up in Major Leagues. And he'd been quiet for a while, but his name has popped up. He's still chasing that dream. He now pitches for the Tijuana Lions in the Mexican Baseball League. In his first three innings, he got three Ks and gave up one run. So I'm glad Caleb's still trying to get back in the big leagues where he had already made it. So they know him. Bring him back. Let's see. Those are pretty much our Pro Bowl major highlights for the week. But again, check out at Pro Bowl Hoosiers on Twitter. David underscore Welsh on Twitter. He's got all the video highlights. These guys really go above and beyond, whether it's going on road trips, talking to the guys in the stands, you know, giving them updates. They really do a great job following, you know, our guys once they leave school. And, you know, about you're about to with graduation weekend coming up. And I really hope we get the sweep of Purdue maybe possibly in our minds think that we're good and we're clinched into that top 12. And also as a nice graduation present for the guys. I believe we're going to Carl next for some Big Ten stuff, right, Bun?
Yep. Yeah, okay. We're going to dive a little bit more into the standings. So right now, boy, it was an interesting week. Actually, I'm going to start with the pick'em. And the reason I'm going to start with the pick'em is not just because, you know, we were picking games. And because Chris and I beat the rest of you this week. Not just because of that. But it's weird, though, for two people that are struggling in pick'ems to win a week this late, because typically that's not how it goes.
Oh, absolutely. I usually go worse as the year goes on.
Right,
absolutely.
Because what is it? What, we start making bold picks to try to dig ourselves out, and it turns out the bold picks were the right picks to make. As a group, we were sub 500 last week, the five of us. I don't think I've remembered ever that happening for a whole week. That wasn't like maybe just like four games early in the season. I mean, this was nuts. Zach was 4-4, Cass 4-4. I'm picking on him. I'm sorry he's not here, but Josh went 2-6. Now, granted, I've had a worse week this year. So I guess I can do that because of that fact. And then Chris and I say we're brag. We were only 5-3.
Best of the week.
But four of us picked Penn State. I was the only one that picked Maryland, and Maryland won it. Four of us picked Northwestern. Only Zach picked Purdue, and Purdue won it. We did all, you know, thank you, Ohio State. All of us did pick Michigan that series. It wasn't Oregon, so we were safe. Josh was the only outlier. He picked Minnesota, and we all picked Nebraska. We did all pick Oregon to win, although Michigan State, Jirwa had a heck of a game.
And he was top five in the nation, best pitch games.
Yeah,
we must have got him a little pissed off by beating him.
Of course, the marquee series, USC. Holding out and taking 2-3 when having a UCLA in the crosstown rivalry game there. That was the one that was really the difference maker for Chris and I, is that we both took USC in that series. Here's another one, and this time it was Chris who was the only one to take Rutgers, who won the series against Illinois, which most of us did not see that coming. Now I'm actually surprised we were as lopsided as we were on this. We were four of us picked Iowa versus just Cass, who got the Washington one right. And Washington continues to just that West Coast dominance over the rest of the league, that kind of wake up call that that the traditional part of the Big Ten needs to have to just, Iowa's going to get one more crack. I mean, in a way, they get two because, you know, Oregon State's kind of a de facto member of the Big Ten this year. But They're going to have a crack at Oregon State and then end the season at Oregon, which could be a real fascinating way for the Big Ten to finish, given that Oregon's ranked fifth in the country and currently third in the Big Ten. Iowa still has a 2.5 game lead over UCLA right now. But again, they're not going to be playing league games. So if UCLA can sweep this weekend, they will cut that to a one game lead before Iowa has to play Oregon. So it could get really, really interesting. With the tiebreaker that Indiana has over Rutgers right now, which is, I forgot how I said that. That was strictly our, oh, you know what? I may not, oh, I didn't. Oh, no, it's right. Over Rutgers and Illinois. That's why it fell to RPI. I think they do have a common opponent, but they all did the same against that common opponent. So right now, RPI is the tiebreaker that has Indiana in seventh instead of eighth or ninth. Indiana has a game over Penn State. And yes, Penn State does hold the head-to-head tiebreaker in that scenario. Nebraska. Indiana, though, holds the head-to-head tiebreaker easily over Michigan State. And the fact that the Michigan State series is a sweep is helpful. So if Michigan State does end up in a three-way tie that involves teams that have all played each other, the fact that Indiana won three of those games would be helpful. And then you go to the cut line. And yes, it is only two games up on 13th Northwestern. But again, it's more the fact that there are five teams in between Indiana and Northwestern that have me feeling pretty good about how this is going to go down. And Purdue would need to sweep Indiana to tie Indiana. Now, obviously that would put Purdue in a positive tiebreaker scenario in that situation, which is why I said I think Indiana just taking one game in that is huge from a solidification perspective. Maryland is another game behind there, so they're really close to knocking Maryland out of the mix. And again, Indiana holds the tiebreaker over Maryland. So overall, I'm feeling pretty good at this point. I'm with you, Chris. I would love to just see Indiana just sweep Purdue and make it to where you're not even thinking about what needs to happen in Michigan outside of having guys who haven't had to shoulder the pitching load as much, the opportunity to throw and try to compete.
Play the West Coast teams are not going to like that scenario if it plays out, because in Michigan could sneak into that four seed. You know, yep. If we're not really, you know, maybe going 100% there on that weekend.
Yeah.
I'm looking at here, SC and Oregon tied at 16-8. So we'll just say they're third or fourth. One game back is Washington. One game back is Michigan. And that fourth seed is so important for this pod thing. They are not going to be Indiana fans if it plays out like that.
All right, so that does take us into the coming week's pick'em. We've got Ohio State at Northwestern. Michigan's traveling to Nebraska. I think that might be an interesting series. UCLA is coming to Illinois, which is interesting because Illinois plays really, really well at home. They can't play well at all on the road, but they're really good at home. You got Maryland at Minnesota. Michigan State at USC. So that's why I don't know if I'm going to be too concerned. I think now, granted, they've got, you know, if Jirwa can throw another complete game, maybe Michigan State can steal one of those. But USC is hot right now, and I honestly felt in the two series that Indiana played, I felt USC was the better team between USC and UCLA. And I know that that's not the general belief, but yeah.
Well, the ones against UCLA were more, the baseball games were played in such a much tighter window, right? I think that whole series was played within, 4 or 5 run gap. Mm-hmm. Every game was close. And then USC had the... We blow them out, and then we're blowing them out again.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not even a true test of where you see how good or not good they are.
Well, and again, I completely agree that UCLA pitched better than USC, but I just was not impressed with UCLA's bats at all. And just the talent and the performance that was there out of the USC bats just impressed me.
Oh, that one right on USC, forget about it.
Yeah.
Ethan Hedges.
That guy was nuts.
Yeah, and he's also their closer. You got Washington at Oregon. Now that brings your scenario more into play, Chris, is the fact that Washington and Oregon have to play. The Washington's got to go to Oregon. Mm-hmm. And then Penn State at Rutgers. So I'll go ahead and give Josh's picks since I've just got those in. Josh is picking Northwestern, Minnesota, USC, and Rutgers. He's taking them as the home teams, and then he is picking three road teams. Not as many. He's not going as road heavy this time because that didn't help him last time. He's going Michigan, UCLA, and Washington as his road teams. I guess I'll go next since I had a decent week. I'm taking Northwestern, Michigan, UCLA, Maryland, USC, Washington, and Rutgers. Chris, what do you got?
All right, I got Northwestern. I really like Nebraska. I don't see how, I mean, they want in this tournament, right? And if they're going to mess around and then not win this one and put it on the last week, I don't even know who they play the next weekend, but I would think a lot of people are going to take Michigan here, but I it's not even like, oh, I got to take the underdog. I really think Nebraska's going to play well, and I think they're going to win. So I got Nebraska, UCLA. I don't see how that's a big deal for them going on the road to Illinois. I know you say they play better at home, but I don't know if they play better than USC or UCLA when they're at home. We'll see. Minnesota, I'm taking them. USC seems like an obvious one. Obviously, the hardest pick was this one. I'm going to go with the home team. It seems like a homer pick, and everybody's going to take it, but I don't know. Our standings are pretty tight. I ain't got it to take Washington right now in this one. I'm going to take Oregon, and I'm sticking with Rutgers. They had a big win for me last week. I see them keeping it rolling. And then Iowa's got the bye, we said, right?
Yep.
Yep.
All right. So so I've got Josh. We've got Chris. And by the way, I guess the standings for Pick'em are really interesting. Zach is now leading by himself. Cass is now one series behind Zach. Josh is one series behind Cass. And Chris is one series behind Josh. So, Cass, you're up.
Okay, well, I think Mike's kind of anticlimactic because I'm pretty sure if I was following correctly, I think I picked the same as Josh. Northwestern, Michigan, UCLA, Minnesota, USC, Washington, and Rutgers.
All right. So Josh will not advance past Cass this week.
Sorry, Josh.
So that's two Washingtons and two Michigans, huh?
Yeah, okay. I've taken three different picks from you two. I got Northwestern. I'm taking Nebraska at home against Michigan as well as Chris. I don't know how the Big Ten will have a tournament in a state where there's not a team, and I can just see Nebraska finding their way in. So I'm going to take the Cornhuskers. I'll take UCLA on the road at Illinois, who just got swept by Rutgers. So I'll take UCLA. I'm going to take Maryland on the road at Minnesota. USC against Michigan State, taking Oregon at home, and then I'm going to take Rutgers coming off that hot three-game win streak. So Rutgers to close it out.
I will say I saw the Washington-Oregon as a coin toss.
Chris, I was a little confused. Who did you take in that series?
Oregon.
You're taking – okay. Yeah, the way you said it confused me.
I know. So, because you know what it was? I wanted to take Washington because I think everybody's going to take Oregon. But I'm like, the standings are kind of tight, and I was like, I'll sit back. And it seems like some people did take Washington after all.
Yeah. Yep.
But then so maybe I did. You know, it looks like me and Zach only have the Minnesota game different, unless I got it wrong. Mm-hmm. So it's only one game between the two of us.
Yep. All right. So that concludes our pick'ems for the week. Actually, I think that concludes every topic I had on my list. Is there anything we did not cover that we want to discuss?
Just that they're going to be honoring the seniors, I would assume, on Saturday. I don't know if you have an official announcement on that,
I have
but
not
it's
seen an
normally
official
the day
announcement.
before the last game at the BART.
Yeah.
So I would think half hour, going with a half hour. It's a 2 p.m. first pitch Saturday, right?
Yeah.
Six
Get
to
in there.
four.
6-2-4. So get in there at 1:15, 1:30. Honor the guys. Hopefully we get to see, because there's different rules and who's being honored which year, and we're clubhouse guys. Hopefully we get a roster put together, maybe to give us some names, especially the clubhouse guys. I know they get honored too. They work really hard, so you want to give them a shout as well. Get to the game a little early Saturday if you can, and honor the guys pregame. They usually get a nice jersey and a frame and all that good stuff, and then we kick Badu's ass.
And I will make sure I have pictures of that I will upload on the live game blog. So for whichever day it happens to be, and we will ask at the Thursday media event, we'll ask, for as much detail as possible. They're not always extremely forthcoming because they oftentimes don't know, and because there are some guys that have to have questions about whether they're going to walk or not. There are guys, I could. Like for example, Grant Holderfield, this is his fourth year. I don't know whether he's going to, he's technically a junior as a baseball player because of a redshirt year, but there'll be questions like that as to who's going to be honored. And now while they won't be specifically honored, you also have to consider the possibility of the true juniors who may get drafted. So there's not going to be a specific honor, but I think it's important that we do recognize the guys that may very well be playing their last series at the BART. Devin Taylor, obviously. That's one of the best to ever put on the Hoosier jersey. This will be his last weekend at the BART. You got Corbin Dickerson. This is his only season with IU, but it's really, really looking now like that's very likely that this will be his last.
He gone.
But there's some other guys. Tyler Cerny. Has a high potential of hearing his name called. So there are potentials for guys, for other guys to hear their name called. And there could always be surprises that you didn't think about. It's not impossible a
That
guy like
happens.
Jacob Vogel could get his name called. So there are other types of potentials out there for the draft perspective. So I'd say it's above all else, if you can get out and and watch these guys one more time.
And I know we've mentioned it already, but plan ahead for traffic and parking. Commencement's always a zoo. Thankfully, the times seem to actually play out pretty well for Friday and Saturday, but just be aware because it's going to be busy around campus. So might take a look at that before you head out.
And again, we'll keep as I will keep information posted. We'll have our socials, the live game blog. If I have details, I will include them in the live game blogs for the game. So if you want to look at different live game blogs, one thing you can just do is go to iubase.com, and at the top or in the upper right, depending on how big your screen is, there will be a link to the next live game blog will be there. And then if you just click on the live game blogs menu from there, you'll get the next three games that are live game blog will be there. So you can jump in any of those, and I will update information in there as well. All right. Well, thank you very much for sticking with us and listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, Chris Saffini, and Zach Horwitz, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.